The milk aisle has received a total makeover as consumers have abandoned the dairy farmer. Instead of different brands of whole, 2% and skim, options now range from soy, almond, and oat. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on today's 360 View, we are going to look at what is causing the world to become more lactose intolerant. Let's get started. A new ad by the creators behind Got Milk has got people talking. International correspondent Roxana Solano explains why this take on getting people to drink milk may have backfired.
Well, Scotty, I don't think actress and comedian Aubrey Plaza intended to get in the middle of the milk wars with this commercial.
The world's first and only milk made from wood. Wood milk started with a simple idea. I saw a tree, and I asked myself, can I drink this? As it turns out, the answer is yes, if you make it into milk.
The commercial went all in, showing different flavors, and it's not until the end, when you see the thick, unappetizing product, do you 100% realize it is a parody. They even created a website and merchandise. Scrolling through to the bottom, you read a disclaimer saying, wood milk is 100% fake and completely made up. And the whole spoof is actually sponsored and paid for by America's milk companies.
Is wood milk real? Absolutely not. Only real milk is real. Then what did I invest in?
The only issue is most millennials and Gen Z would drink wood milk. As you said before, Scotty, the milk aisle has changed. There are tons of different products labeled milk, making non-dairy alternatives very popular. But the question is, would you drink wood milk?
Roxana, with all of these options, I have to tell you, I am not amused. I mean, I'm sorry, I had to enter my joke on that one, I'm sorry. But no, I would not. I'm one of those that believes in, you know, there's a reason why God put cows on this earth, make milk. Why, it scares me of things that are altered in sort of in a scientific era.
Well, for me, it's like there's so many products based up of dairy, you know, like pastries, well, cheese, obviously, cheese sandwich, bread with butter. Like, it's hard not to eat or drink milk.
Right, and I think it's important that we know what actually, when they say milk, what is milk every other day? I mean, we have lots of other questions in this world. Now we just added one more into our repertoire. Roxana, thank you so much for reporting on this. Do you know there's almost 79 million vegans in the world? And while that number sounds big, it is only 1% of the global population. But the number of people who are choosing not to drink milk from the cow is increasingly growing. Now, the choice to consume milk alternatives is subjective and varies from person to person, all based on individual preferences, beliefs, and dietary needs. Some are choosing the alternative because they might have an allergy or lactose intolerance, while others choose the alternative because they believe it is healthier for their body. Then there's those that believe in drinking non-dairy because they are choosing this path because they believe it is better for the planet, blaming either methane produced by cows or the possible inhumane treatment of cattle on dairy farms. But with retail sales of plant-based milk alternatives topping $20.9 billion globally last year, the increase in availability of products and the marketing of options definitely is causing real competition for the dairy industry. In fact, statistical data reveals milk alternatives are the largest category of plant-based foods, exceeding meat, ready-made meals, and ice cream products. What effect will this have on the future of the dairy industry and worldwide availability? Well, joining us to discuss is Sylvain Charbois, is a Canadian researcher and professor in food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. He is a former member of the university's Faculty of Management. Thanks for joining us. Dr. Charbois, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to start off this conversation. Are you seeing an actual decrease in demand for milk from dairy farms right now?
Actually, the consumption per capita has been dropping steadily for the last several years. So consumption overall is quite steady. But with even with more people to feed, we are seeing a drop per capita. So we are drinking less milk. Now, with dairy products, it's a bit different. Dairy products, depending on the product you look at, demand actually does go up from time to time. Like butter, for example, a few years ago, the demand for butter did go up for other products as well. So it really depends of the product you look at. But generally speaking, fluid milk consumption is way down per capita on both sides of the border, really.
Why do you feel like this is happening at the present time?
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of people are considering reconsidering their relationship with dairy. I mean, we're the only mammals on Earth drinking milk from another mammal. And when you think about it, it really can feel awkward for some people. There is some history, obviously. It didn't happen overnight. We've been doing this for thousands and thousands of years. But now with science, we know more about nutrition, we know more about health. And so now there are more options. All of a sudden, people can actually get their nutritional fix elsewhere, consuming other types of food. And thanks to science, thanks to research, we're able to provide these options to consumers. That's why people are starting to reconsider their relationship with milk and dairy, generally speaking.
Are dairy farmers currently trying to do anything to help encourage consumption of their product? Again, at such a large scale as we've seen in the past. I mean, one of the largest lobbying groups used to be, especially in the West, was the dairy farmers, especially amongst the education department. Are you seeing the idea of stepping up those marketing campaigns again as one of their possible approaches?
I actually believe that right now we're in the midst of a dairy war of sort, because on the one side, of course, you have the dairy lobby, which is incredibly powerful on both sides of the border, by the way. They have a voice at many tables. They're quite influential politically and economically. But on the other side, what we're seeing that's new is our plant-based companies who manufacture products using vegetable proteins. They're out there actually not only advocating for their product, but they openly criticize dairy in general. Oatly is certainly one company that comes to mind right now in America. You're seeing the company advertising in many newspapers, ads. They're putting ads criticizing dairy. So it's something we haven't seen before, but you can see that right now. Both sides, I guess, are challenging each other. But still, we have to recognize the fact that the dairy lobby in North America is still quite influential and powerful.
Have we actually considered what would happen if dairy farms around the world actually started closing? And do you see some of the same lack of consumption in present day? How it could potentially lead to that? It's not just the supply of milk which will be affected. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem we have to worry about.
Oh, absolutely. So when you think about a dairy farm, you have to think of the ecosystem around it. Think of the machinery. Think of the jobs and the work in rural America and rural Canada. I mean, those are critical things. When you think about how to grow an economy, you can't just grow an economy by amplifying urban centers. You have to think about, farmland use, and you quickly realize that animal proteins play a huge role with territory occupancy, basically in North America. It's quite critical. A lot of farmers are actually growing crops to feed animals. And of course, with dairy farms, you have dairy farms really being quite busy growing crops to feed animals and so on and so forth. So there's a huge ecosystem around each and every farm in North America that can be denied, really. So obviously the dairy sector is quite critical for our agri-food economy in North America.
On a global perspective, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization just announced milk, eggs, and meat are vital sources of nutrients and calories. But does this not go against the push we are seeing to go vegan globally or to use more alternatives to dairy and other types of naturally grown agriculture products?
I think the message that at least I'm hearing is that the issue of proteins in general is very much about choice. It's not about this or that. It's more about this and that. For many years, obviously, animal proteins have had all the attention in the world, and most consumers in North America were fixated in eating and consuming animal proteins. But now we have options. I think what the UN is saying basically is that yes, there are traditions, they are habits, and it's not necessarily bad to eat, drink milk, eat dairy products, eat meat. But at the same time, we do have alternatives now we can also embrace. That's kind of how I'm reading the UN's message that came out recently.
Do you agree with what they're saying? You know, unfortunately, sometimes politicians say things not based on actual scientific factors or what is actually happening on the ground. Rather, they get their sources from libraries or things which might just look good on paper. Do you agree with what their assumption is?
I do. I do. I think I've always believed that it's important for consumers to be empowered with options and not deny them of options through legislation. I don't think it's right. At the same time, though, I certainly would prioritize transparency. Texas, for example, just recently passed a law forcing protein retailers, so grocers, to label what's in the product if there are insects, for example, or if the product is actually cultivated in a lab, and that's coming in the US probably by the end of 2023. Retailers will be forced to label any presence of cultivated meat products, and so I think that's an important thing to do because it will inform consumers properly and will provide more transparency. And that's kind of what's it's missing right now. And if you lose the trust of consumers, a lot of things can happen, unfortunately.
Thank you, Dr. Charlebois. Stay with us. Now, after the break, we're going to continue our conversation and ask who is hurting the dairy industry's growth the most?
Absolutely admit that currently the OEC is in crisis. Clearly, I think there is no doubt about it. What participating states of the OEC would have hoped is the OEC being able to play a role in either preventing or at least now in managing the conflict between Russia and Ukraine or Russia and the West.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Отверженных. Нам уже от нее не деться. Ветер степной пахнет смертью, мятой и медом. Мы пьем за любовь, за правду, за наше счастливое детство. Пьем, не чокаясь, из гильз от гранатомета.
Вся русская литература – это война. Поэзия там, где больно.
Победим, у нас нет других вариантов. Иначе эта вся свора размотает нас на тряпки. Так что нам придется побеждать.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation regarding the global trend away from dairy with Sylvain Charlebois, who is a Canadian researcher and professor in food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. He's also a former dean of the university's Faculty of Management. Thank you for continuing to join us, Doctor. You know, I am finding this conversation fascinating because for the majority of our adult lives and even our children's, we were told organic was the way to go. In fact, the less scientific involvement in food and more just naturally grown from the earth was the goal for ourselves, our bodies, and more importantly, what we fed our children. Are you concerned this trend seems like almost the exact opposite?
Well, many years ago, organics were the only option we had outside conventional food. The mainstream stuff really dominated the marketplace. And so if someone wanted to get something different, they had to go with organics. Right now, with this hyper-fragmentation of our food demand, we're seeing more innovation. We're seeing more companies looking at the market very differently. We're not talking about the consumer anymore. We're talking about consumers, recognizing that all of us have different needs, different wants, and that's great, I think, because in the last, I'd say, 10 years or so, we've made some great progress. And I actually do believe, at least based on the data that we have in Canada, consumers are actually way more food literate and protein literate since COVID, because we are spending more time at home. We are cooking more. We know more recipes. We've used new ingredients. And so consumers are much more engaged now. And with inflation, it got even better, I think. People are much more careful with how they spend their money. They're investing in nutrition, not just buying calories. So when it comes to proteins, obviously, they're looking around. They're looking for different options. If the meat counter spooks them, if they only look at the meat trifecta, beef, chicken, and pork, which has been the case for decades, they'll actually move elsewhere and try to seek a more affordable protein source.
Could this lead to more malnutrition in some of those areas around the world, which was already struggling to have a food source for consumption? I mean, you're taking something as natural away that an animal can provide.
I think we always have to be concerned about food insecurity. I think we're bound to see food insecure regions around the world, unfortunately, because you have wars, geopolitics, unfortunately. There's always a country out there or a region impacted by climate change as well, severely. And that leads to famine, unfortunately. And we saw that a few years ago. We're seeing it still today. So I think our best hope is to actually, is to better tool our farmers to grow and increase yields, and making sure that crops remain as affordable as possible, including pulses, lentils, chickpeas, and all those crops that we grow in North America, that would allow eventually groups that are impacted by climate change to have access to affordable protein. What has not happened in North America in recent years is to see plant-based solutions, analogs, being priced affordably for consumers. They're often priced higher. They're more expensive, but that is about to change. We're starting to see a shift in the marketplace. There was a huge gap of about 35-40% between analogs and traditional meat products, but that is going down progressively. And so I do believe that at the meat counter we'll reach parity very, very soon. With dairy and dairy alternatives, we have reached parity pretty much. And so right now, if a consumer wants oat milk or soy milk or almond milk, we are expecting a consumer to spend as much money as if that person would want dairy milk.
Are you worried, as we've so often found when you deal with money and consumption and the consumer, that we could be compromising the integrity of the nutrition of a product to make a cheaper product? I mean, how can consumers know which food comes from the ground or a lab?
So yeah, right now, what we found in recent years is that for alternatives, there was this fascination to replicate what was already out there: beef, pork, chicken. The reality is that most North Americans enjoy eating meat products. So what they came in with a product that was more expensive, more ultra processed, and not as healthy. And so it was hard to see, to understand why a consumer would opt for something that is more expensive, less nutritious, and ultra processed to replace something that they actually already enjoy. So, but that is about to change. What we're seeing right now are many companies reformulating, making their products healthier, and this fascination to replace something, this stomach share mentality, is slowly fading away. And this is what's new in agri-food, I think, is that the stomach share mentality, which means food is a zero-sum game. If I get into your stomach as a consumer, the other person, the other company won't. It's not that case anymore. I actually do think that consumers or the marketplace is after values. And so what values are embedded in plant-based products? Well, planet, the environment, animal welfare, things like that. People are actually going to look at products very differently. And the food industry has been slow adapting to this new reality, but we're getting there. So I don't believe that plant-based product or vegetable proteins won't be nutritious for all that for long. And as far as countries that are impacted by famine or food insecurity, well, I do believe that there'll be more unprocessed commodities provided to them. And of course, if it's unprocessed, it's pretty healthy. Of course, it boils down to affordability. And that's been a challenge over the last 12 months. But now things are way more stable.
Interesting. You did just bring up another aspect in all of this, the climate change debate and what is going on with animal concerns or the treatment of animals. You know, PETA just produced a 12-page document on why people should stop drinking milk. One reason is they considered animal abuse, saying the mass production of dairy turns innocent, gentle cows into industrialized milking machines. Your thoughts on this?
They're legitimate concerns. I worked on dairy farms when I was a kid. I'm very much aware of what happens on dairy farms, but most city dwellers do not. I mean, they don't understand dairy genetics and how things work. And farmers, they were all for advocacy. They're out there trying to educate the public about the hard work they do, but they've never figured out that perhaps what city dwellers were hearing from them are things that they wouldn't like or wouldn't appreciate. There are things on farms that, you know, for someone who doesn't understand agriculture, could be troubling, you know. So that's the one thing that is going on right now. And that's why more and more people are concerned about animal welfare, questioning our industrialized model. Is this really something we want to encourage, yes or no? So I do believe that animal welfare concerns won't disappear. They will likely grow over time. And here's the other thing that makes us believe that it will change, is that over the last few years, many, many people have gotten new pets at home. In Canada alone, 16 million pets are owned by humans. And as soon as it's in the scientific literature, as soon as you have a pet at home, your perspective about animal welfare changes. And so you are basically expecting, to a certain extent, that farmers will treat their animals the same way as city dwellers would treat their pets. And that's not going to go away. We're having less children. We're having more pets. So I do believe that animal welfare will continue to be a growing concern for people. Now, PETA is, of course, a lobby group. You have to also understand that there's some history behind dairy, and it's not new that we've been milking cows and producing milk. So that also needs to be appreciated as well. Progress will lead to change, but it will take some time.
I mean, the treatment of animals is just one element of it. Then there's the climate change element. New York City Mayor Eric Adams came out and said the vast majority of food is contributing to our emissions crisis lies in meat and dairy products. We already know a plant-powered diet supposedly is better for your physical and mental health. Is it better for the planet? Do you believe cows and dairy farms are really the source which needs to be targeted right now, causing damage to our planet? Or is this just kind of a scapegoat, do you think, for other reasons instead of dealing with climate change these days?
A little. First of all, the dairy sector is of course looking at climate change very seriously. They're looking at reducing gas emissions as much as possible. And many dairy groups around North America are aiming at becoming carbon neutral by 2040, 2050. So they are aware that they need to change. And they are aware that their practices right now may not be consistent with targets set by the Paris Agreement, for example, by 2030. But we are seeing some movement. So putting pressure on the dairy sector is not necessarily a bad thing, but to actually claim that this is just not an viable option at this point would be, I would say, premature, because you need to allow the industry to adapt and change, and technologies will come forward to help dairy farmers to become more environmentally friendly. And that takes time.
Thank you, Professor Sylvain Charlebois, for joining us. You know, the dairy industry has faced many challenges in recent years, which have contributed to its struggles. It's important to note that while the dairy industry is facing these challenges, it continues to be a significant sector in many regions, and dairy products remain a staple in the diets of many people worldwide. Efforts are also being made within the industry to adapt to these changing consumer preferences, improving the sustainability practices, and exploring new market opportunities. This has been Skynell Hughes with your 360 View. Thanks for watching.